Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. He's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists. All under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, Colin Trevorrow, the icon, is back this week for Jurassic World 3. The gang is back together. We're going to get into it. This could be the biggest episode we've ever done, Mia.
The biggest episode, T-Rex sized.
Indominus sized Jurassic World 3 episode. We'll also be covering Hustle, starring the Sandman himself, Adam Sandler, the Jane's community reviews that you have tagged Weekend Watch List, and maybe, just maybe, a little lo-fi sci-fi later as we shuffle our own watch lists.
Before we get into lo-fi sci-fi and my own watch list pick, which was a 17th century murder mystery comedy, let's get into Jurassic World. Let's see what's going on with those dinosaurs, okay?
The buzz is off the charts right now, Mia. What is Dominion about? Can you prep us for the final movie in this journey?
I believe I can do that. So Jurassic World Dominion, 4 years after Isla Nublar was destroyed, dinosaurs now live and hunt alongside humans all over the world. This fragile balance will reshape the future and determine, once and for all, whether human beings are to remain the apex predators on a planet they now share with history's most fearsome creatures. This is from the acclaimed director of The Book of Henry. A masterpiece of a film, by the way. Check out The Book of Henry. It is unlike anything you have ever seen before. I can promise you that. Have you seen it, Slim?
No, I'm trying to parse through the Mia subtext of that comment, and I can't get a read on that. I can't tell if you actually love Book of Henry or you're playing a prank on me of some kind. Are you pranking me?
Doing a little prank. Okay, I'm mischievous. I'm the mischievous one. It is not an acclaimed film, but I recommend it anyway.
So this is on. I want to say only 36,000 watch lists. I feel like Crimes of the Future had more watch lists last week.
That's the society I want to live in.
So that is solidifying your love of the Letterboxd community. Yes. So maybe there is some Jurassic World fatigue setting in.
I think that will happen when none of the movies in your trilogy are very good. You start getting tired of going to see them.
But it's still going to make like $1 billion. That's exactly the thing. It's we can have fun saying the first two movies are quote unquote bad. And maybe the third one will be good. Maybe Colin, you know, completes the trilogy. I was going to ask, do we even need Jurassic World to save cinema after Tom already has a few weeks ago? So we don't
exactly.
Really.
It's already saved. So we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be okay because cinema is saved.
So I've been watching the trilogy. It's crazy to think that there's a Jurassic World trilogy, but there is when you say it out loud. So I've been watching it with my friends on my podcast, and the first two, let me just say I'm not incredibly inspired for this third one. However, my son is excited to go see a Jurassic movie in theaters, so I can't discount that fact that, you know, he's shown some excitement to go see a movie with me. So that's the big positive for me for the Jurassic World Dominion. Plus, the gang is allegedly back together. Got the original cast of the first one back again. And I think, I mean, it's going to be a big cast because Pratt's back. Your boy, Chris Pratt, right? Like, you just stuck out her tongue.
I did.
Pratt, I mean, little known fact, Pratt is in 50% of movies released in 2022. That might be
it's
a fact.
It's interesting that he's in 50% because he should be in 0%. So I'm not sure how.
The Pratt. You want the Pratt Renaissance, the Pratt-a-sance to end finally.
Please. I'm excited to be liberated from the Pratt-a-sance.
Let's move away from Chris Pratt, the Pratt-a-sance we wanted to end, and move to a seasoned actor we all love, the Sandman, Adam Sandler. We can all agree. Everyone loves him. And he's rocking a beard in this movie. Hustle is dropping on Netflix this weekend. This is on 7,000 watch list, directed by Jeremiah Zagar. After discovering a once-in-a-lifetime player with a rocky past abroad, a down-on-his-luck basketball scout takes it upon himself to bring the phenom to the States without his team's approval. Against the odds, they have one final shot to prove they have what it takes to make the NBA. What are your top Sandman movies? Mia, is Uncut Gems in there?
Well, of course, Uncut Gems has to be in there, but also the Meyerowitz stories by Noah Baumbach. I just watched that for the first time a couple of weeks ago, and I was struck by his performance. He plays like a goofy dad, and he does a great job at it. He's a great actor. I didn't fully appreciate Adam Sandler until Uncut Gems. I hate to admit it, but that is when I finally appreciated him as an actor. So I'm looking forward to his performance in the basketball movie.
Yeah, Mia was chuckling because off air, I admitted I'd never even heard of this movie, Meyerowitz Stories, until we were researching. So that will be added to my watch list. And this, I watched the trailer earlier. This is coming out on Netflix. Philadelphia, this is where I live. And this is a big Philadelphia movie. The team he works for is the 76ers. So he's wearing a ton of Philadelphia merch. And I'm not sure if you remember when James McAvoy was filming Split, I think, a few years ago. He was wearing that John t-shirt that got some like social media play. It was like the Wawa logo, but it said John. So that's actually from my buddy's shop, South Fellini. So in the trailer for this, he wears a ton of Philadelphia-inspired clothing from their shop. So I just want to give them a little plug. Philadelphia company making fun Philly-inspired clothing. So any Philly fans out there, this could be the movie for us.
Yes, Philly representation. This and Mikey and Nikki.
That's right. Ehrlich wrote a review that I just want to spotlight real quick. This is one of the few reviews that are out and about positive. Adam Sandler really, really loves basketball, and in his post-Meyerowitz Stories era, he also seems to be interested in making good movies. At the very least, he no longer seems actively opposed to the idea. So a positive take. So I'm excited to watch this. I watched the trailer. I feel like I maybe saw the whole movie in the trailer, but it looked good from what I saw.
Okay, so let's transition into our next movie. I did write this transition for Jurassic World, but I think it's fun, so I'm going to say it anyway. Hey, Slim,
yeah.
You know what is even scarier than a bunch of dinosaurs taking over a theme park?
What?
Politicians taking our bodily autonomy away. I have found that when I am feeling very stressed out about the state of the world, watching documentaries helps me to contextualize what's going on, gives me knowledge, kind of empowers me. And this new documentary, The Janes, directed by Tia Lesson and Emma Pildis, is going to be on HBO Max. And it is about the history of Roe v. Wade, essentially. So here's the synopsis. Defying the state legislature that outlawed abortion, the Catholic Church that condemned it, and the Chicago mob that was profiting from it, the members of Jane risked their personal and professional lives to support women with unwanted pregnancies. In the pre-Roe v. Wade era, a time when abortion was a crime in most states and even circulating information about abortion was a felony in Illinois, the Janes provided low-cost and free abortions to an estimated 11,000 women. This is a true story. It really happened. It's about an important underground grassroots collective that was unfortunately largely erased by history. Also, this has been adapted into an upcoming narrative feature starring Elizabeth Banks, Chris Messina, and Sigourney Weaver plays the leader of the Janes Collective, which is really, really fun to watch her as this badass feminist. So this is a really, really important story. It's going to be on HBO Max, easy to watch. Well, not easy to watch. It's actually very, very upsetting to watch, but sure. In a cathartic way. So I highly recommend it for anybody who kind of wants to contextualize what's going on in the country right now.
Yeah, it's kind of I would think about this a lot with like political climate and like the news cycle. It kind of like bums me out that like for a few weeks, this is like a hot topic, but then, you know, things move on to something else inevitably. And the people that you need to think about this stuff and help out and become an ally inevitably have moved on to something else. So this is a very important documentary that I hope people check out. And we do want to spotlight a few reviews for folks that have seen it. Ella wrote a review. I'll tell you what, my favorite part of this was the distinct and precise lack of crying. These talking head docs, especially when they interview women, love to squeeze out a tear to really create some kind of narrative arc. But that bullshit just has no place here. This was about duty and respect and determination in getting the job done. They did. And then they carried on with their lives. No melodrama about it. Great review.
Nice.
And then Ian, I was thinking about this as well in terms of like true crime documentaries. And Ian, dear friend of mine, spotlights it. Well, would you look at that? True crime documentaries that aren't about white guys killing people do exist. inspiring documentary about a group of women who were literally risking it all to provide abortions for before it was legalized in the United States. So cool to see so many of those involved in the story giving interviews. So that's another thing I'm thinking about. Like, so many true crime stuff are just like truly depressing murder, like that whole genre, the podcast genre of true crime. It's so popular, but I'm excited to see other things get the spotlight, other topics, other important topics. And this is definitely one of those.
Yes, completely, completely agree. It's nice to see it also desensationalized, because so much of true crime is just like hyper sensationalized to the point where you kind of, it's dehumanizing. But this documentary does a great job at humanizing, which is what documentaries should do.
Let's go back in time to our previous week, Mia, to see how we fared in life buying 4K discs and see how the reviews of the recent releases shook out. The first thing I want to call out is I just got a brand new shiny 4K disc in the mail, Mia, for Bridge on the River Kwai, David Lean 4K Steelbook. In my opinion, better than Lawrence of Arabia, this film.
Go off.
I'm not sure if you have any hot takes as nuclear as that, but I can't wait to fire up this disc. I watched the digital 4K of this last year and it blew me away. Something about the film stock from that day and age, all of these kind of movies like Arabia on 4K is one of the most gorgeous things I've ever seen in my life.
Are there any fun special features on this one?
There is an interview from the release of one of the actors on like a talk show from the release period of the film, which cracks me up because like those are, if they're not on YouTube, you'll never see that stuff. So those are the kind of special features that I get a kick out of, just seeing like old school PR interviews from when these movies were originally released. So I'm excited to dig into those discs.
Yes, these are historical archives, straight up.
Straight up. Any reviews you want to spotlight this week?
Yes, I do. I really want to spotlight some reviews of my man Cronenberg's Crimes of the Future. So happy that we're living in a time period where at least there's a new Cronenberg in theaters. It's just out there. It's playing. It is playing.
Surreal.
Probably even right now as we speak, people are watching it. So this review from Dave Horwitz really sums up how I feel about the film as well. Here it is. Probably the most beautifully, disgustingly metaphorical rumination on what it means to create I've ever seen.
Whoa.
And it's funny too. Crone Zone, we don't deserve you. Kristen Stewart, MVP, she had me cackling. Thank you.
Crone Zone, that's a great phrase.
Crone
Zone. We got Cronin Babes, we got Crone Zone. I mean, it's all looking up here for Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Thomas, there was a review I wanted to spotlight, which I had to give some inside details. Me and I are both wearing a Portrait of a Lady on Fire t-shirt that I believe Thomas had sent both of us. Thomas created these gorgeous Portrait of a Lady on Fire shirts that we just both so happened to own. And I had Thomas's review spotlighted totally by happenstance. So give a shout out to Thomas. I liked it, but I was anticipating too much. That's not the movie's fault. The world of the story is well built. The vibe is perfect. Thematically has a lot going on, which I'd like to dig into a bit deeper now that my brain wouldn't be so preoccupied with what's going on with all the bodies in the story. Kristen Stewart rocks. More Kristen callouts.
Yeah, that's the thing about this one is like while you're watching it, there's so much going on that it's really, really hard to absorb in the moment. But I found that the more I think about this film specifically afterwards, the more I appreciate it. And it's like kind of more unraveling in my mind. It's interesting. I want to share one more. This is from SNL's Sarah Squirm. She is a Letterboxd user, just so everybody knows. And her review is 5 stars and a heart and simply the heart eyes emoji. Yeah,
beautiful.
Sarah Squirm.
KK Slider wrote a review, Cronenberg's horniest movie since Crash. So that was a pleasant surprise.
Once again, I think it's awesome that KK Slider, the dog from Animal Crossing, is using Letterboxd and is talking about Cronenberg and horny movies. That is awesome to me. That really blows my mind.
Just real quick, I do want to spotlight the averages of those movies. So Crimes of the Future, so far after a week of release, 3.4 average on Letterboxd. Watcher, 3.4 average. And Fire Island leading the pack on Hulu with 3.7 average on Letterboxd. Loved it.
That one was fun. We talked about that last week, right? Yeah.
A lot of fun. A lot of fun with that movie. Did you see it? What about Mad God? I heard whispers that you might have gotten access to see Phil Tippett's Mad Gotti. Can you confirm or deny these rumors that I'm seeing circulating?
I can confirm. I did see Mad God. I did watch it. I gave it 4 stars. Disgusting in the best way possible. Some of the most just like grotesque images I've ever seen. So for let me say what Mad God is really quick. We're going to talk about it. Not we, tragically, but Mitchell and Slim are going to talk about it next week. But I just want to give a little teaser that Mad God is a stop motion animated horror with no dialogue. It was made by Phil Tippett over the course of 30 years. Like, he has been working on this since the 80s. It is a pet project of his. Lots of love poured into it. Phil Tippett worked on Jurassic Park, Star Wars, RoboCop, Starship Troopers, and most importantly, the Twilight Saga.
One of those feels slightly out of place, but it's crazy.
This man worked on both Star Wars and Twilight, and now he has a movie out that you will be able to watch, and that is also awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think this is hitting Shudder probably next week, maybe next weekend it officially hits Shudder. There's been some reviews on Letterboxd. Some folks are lucky as you to have seen this, and I can't wait to watch this. Stop motion horror, that's all you need, really. That's the only plug you need. Sounds amazing.
I love the art of stop motion, and sadly, I feel like it is disappearing because of technology, CGI specifically, and because it's really effing hard to do. It takes hours and hours and hours. So this movie is incredibly impressive that it was even made. It's hard to even put into words. Just go see it. It's also going to be in theaters briefly. Next week. So, and I recommend seeing it on the big screen because the scope Holy of this cow. Thing is incredible.
Maybe the last review will spotlight Watcher. We watched last week with our dear friend Micah Monroe. We love you. Alexandria's review, an excellent psychological thriller from first-time director, had me feeling uneasy from the first few minutes. The mood, coloring, and score all give you such a feeling of dread. The last 20 minutes were practically flawless. So check out the Watcher.
Weekend Watcher list. Okay, now let's check in on the Letterboxd Top 50 of 2022 list to see what is at the top of the list for things released this year. Highest new entry is a Spanish film, Lullaby, by Alauda Ruiz de Zua, which enters at number 10. Amaya, who has just become a mother, decides to return for guidance after her partner is temporarily away to her parents' house along the coast. It premiered at the Berlin Film Festival this year, then swept the Malaga Film Festival Awards before opening in Spain. No U.S. distributor yet. Sad. Someone pick it up.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of seeing Jack's notes and how he's tracking things moving into the top 50. It gets you like an early sight into what could potentially be a big movie by the end of the year, or even before release. And the next one he wanted to spotlight, the Indian action thriller film Vikram, enters at number 12, opened in many countries, including India, the UK, France, and Australia on June 3rd. Fire Island managed to place in a list, snagging number 35. And RRR went up to number 11. After that brief stint in theater. So it was cool to see that get back on the charts and move up a little bit.
I want to give a shout out to RRR because I'm going to be seeing it soon in theaters on the biggest screen at the AMC Grove. Not sure if anybody heard about this, but it's really funny. last week they played RRR at the AMC Grove. They lost the second half of the film. So people just went home after intermission and finished it on Netflix. And,
oh my God.
It was a disaster. And because of that, they're screening it again. And tickets were only $5. And I will be going to that.
Wow.
So I'm super, super excited to see this in a theater with like a pumped crowd on a big screen.
Do you have to wear like sunglasses when you go into the AMC? Because any weekend watch list fans sees
oh, yeah.
Mia
I mean,
walk in the theater.
Constantly hounded.
Yeah. Like streamers going off, horns.
The fandom. Yeah. The fandom. If anybody else is at RRR, let's hang out. It's going to be fun.
Shout out.
We can all be besties.
Enter the Crone Zone at RRR.
Exactly.
With me.
Exactly. Plus, if enough of us see it, like, the more people see it, the more it'll stay in theaters, which is awesome.
That's
like,
true.
We've already seen it getting this resurgence and theaters booking it again because of how popular it is. And that warms my heart, to be honest. The power of cinema.
The power of cinema. Let's continue warming hearts with our final segment of the show where we shuffle our own watch lists together. And last week, you know, as we mentioned, Mitchell is on a well-deserved vacation. They'll be back next week. I shuffled last week with you and I got The One I Love. That was my movie with Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss. I love Elizabeth Moss.
Me too.
I need her in more films. 100%. So this one I had not seen, but I believe you gave it some high praise last week. A couple in marriage therapy head to a sort of bread and breakfast to get them back on track. Ted Danson is their therapist, believe it or not. And they start having these strange moments in the B&B where they don't remember having like a great night together. They're talking about like, oh, remember last night we had a great time? And the other one is like, I don't remember that. So they enter this like sort of guest house and realize that they see a version of their partner in there that is almost like their best version of their marriage partner. And when they leave, you know, they have the conversation with their actual partner. Like, I saw you in there. You were amazing. It was like this beautiful moment that we had together. So I loved it. I love this take on, you know, marriage counseling, like trying to get back to that partner that you remembered from years ago. And I had an amazing time with this. It was funny. It was so well edited, so well written. And I was so inspired by this movie that I finally made a list for some of my favorite lo-fi sci-fi movies. And I consider those kind of like mainly dramas with like a hint of science fiction in there somewhere where it's not like really the forefront of the film. So I haven't linked in the episode notes. So this was probably one of my favorite shuffles so far. I had a great time with this movie.
Yay. Yeah. I really enjoyed this one when I watched it.
It was kind of one of those like, oh man, I wish more people would talk about this movie. That's how much I enjoyed it. And the poster is definitely something that catches your eye. So if anyone else is looking for some lo-fi sci-fi movies, definitely add those to your watch list.
I love a hand-drawn poster.
100%.
Yeah.
Did Phil Tippett do this poster?
Yeah, right after Twilight.
Let's talk about your shuffle. I want to hear about this thing.
Ooh, The Draftsman's Contract was my weekend watch list shuffle pick. This one is by Peter Greenaway, who's one of my favorite directors. He did The Cook, The Thief, The Wife, and Her Lover. That's probably his most well-known film. Nobody makes movies like him. So this one is about an artist who is commissioned by the wife of a wealthy landowner to make a series of drawings of the estate while her husband is away. And it's actually a murder mystery, despite what that kind of benign synopsis says. And what's interesting about this murder mystery is that it is fully solvable, but it's also not like dumbing it down. This is a British film, so it's not like, you know, American films have to spoon feed mystery stuff to the audiences and like kind of sensationalize it. But this is very grounded, very dialogue heavy and literary, and it's a brain teaser. Like it's just like kind of a fun little puzzle in the form of a film.
Love it.
And Greenaway does stuff like this. Like his other films, Drowning by Numbers, there's like a number in every single scene going up to a certain amount of numbers. Like he hides little things in all of his movies that keeps you engaged while you're watching it because you're like looking out for little clues.
Right, right.
And it's really interesting. Like I just don't see anybody else do stuff like that. Last thing I want to say about it, to shout out Peter Greenaway some more because I just love him so much as a Greenaway groupie. Was that if you enjoy Cronenberg, especially Dead Ringers, check out A Zed in Two Knots because it came out before Dead Ringers and is essentially like a way yuckier, more macabre, weirder, artsier version of Dead Ringers. It's like two twins who are obsessed with death and decay and do weird stuff about it.
Holy smokes.
Check that out as well. Woo, okay. Greenaway.
Some great watchlist additions this episode, I have to say. All right, so we will see each other again in 2 weeks, but before we go, we have to shuffle again. We have to head to our watch list.
Right.
And we usually do, we filter service by stream only, since we have, I think pro members can do that. So we'll sort by movies that we can readily watch at our home, on our couch, and I will then sort by next shuffle. So we'll go by the first movie that appears after I hit shuffle. Oh my God, I'm back. I am back.
Tell me.
Ninja 2 Shadow of a Tear, 2013, Isaac Florentine, an ancient hero returns with a vengeance. This is streaming on the Roku channel, Crackle, Pluto, Tubi. So you know what kind of movie I'm getting into if that's all the streaming services that it's on.
Ninja 2?
All right, what did you get? Oh my God, your eyes just went wide open.
Because it's one that I've been wanting to watch for years and years that I just talked about with a friend about how I really want to watch it. And now here it is. Memories of Murder by Bong Joon-ho.
Wow. Oh my gosh. What a
hence
shuffle.
The eyes bugging out of my head.
Holy smokes. 4.3 average on Letterboxd. This is in the top 250. This is number 75. On the Letterboxd top 2.
And I have, and it's Song Kang-ho of Parasite and like a billion other incredible Korean films. He's like one of the greatest working actors right now and ever. I've been really wanting to watch this, but I've been like kind of waiting for the right time. You know, with like these big movies, you're like, I want it to be perfect when I watch it. But here we are. We were meant to watch it for Weekend Watch List. It's fate.
Streaming on Hulu right now. So we were talking about murder mysteries earlier. Now is the time.
Yes.
For you to check this off your watch list too. Holy cow. What a week. Before we go, we should spotlight a few reviews that other folks are shuffling along with us and tagging Weekend Watch List. Didi Rose, believe it or not, watched In the Mood for Love. Finally, there is not one kiss shared by anyone in the film, but the sensuality emanates nevertheless. So that's another big watch list addition, In the Mood for Love for Diddy Rose.
Yes. Congrats, Diddy Rose. That movie is so beautiful. Philip also has a review for All Monsters Attack. It's the weekend, so my son requested another viewing. I just want to say I love these dads watching movies with their sons. Yes. I think that's really sweet. Checked eBay while we were watching and found a good deal on the new vinyl soundtrack pressing and I'm pumped to surprise him with it. Movie rules, haters can take a walk. That is so sweet. Yes, film dads.
Haters can take a walk. Love it. That should be the show motto. Haters can take a walk.
Haters can take a walk. I will have to take a walk for being a Chris Pratt hater. I can do that.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And don't forget to check out my lo-fi sci-fi list. It's also in the episode notes too.
After Yang better be in there.
Oh, you better believe After Yang is in there.
Thank you so much to our crew, and thank you to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript, and to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.